It was at that point I knew that I wanted to get in the startup space because I really like change. I like wearing many different hats. I like a fast-paced environment. And so ultimately, when I did that kind of research or that outreach, I realized that that was a path for me.
This is Retained Learnings, a podcast where Canadian finance leaders share strategic advice and potential solutions to answer some of the finance department's most important questions. I'm your host, Rob Kazam, the founder and CEO of Float. Thanks for listening, and I hope you learned something from today's episode.
Hey, everyone. My name is Ruslan, one of the co-founders at Float. I've been working on Float and the team here for the last few years. We started working on this product and the space out of university with a simple idea of killing expense reports and making finance teams' lives easier and better. And for the last few years, I've been on this journey. I'm super excited about interviewing one of our existing customers today who's been instrumental in providing us the feedback and generally is super engaged with the community in Canada on the finance side and is always sharing a ton of wisdom with myself and everybody else at Float every single day. I hope you enjoy this conversation and let's get started. Today, I'm excited to sit down with Lenny, Director of Finance at LumiQ. It's a podcast app with tens of thousands of users. They have hundreds of episodes and over 60 people dedicated to making professional education enjoyable. Lenny, we're really, really looking forward to talking with you today. I know you've joined our team recently at All Hands. I know you've been very influential in the financial community here in Canada. Super excited to interview today and hear a little bit about your background and about your career as well.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to being on this podcast and hopefully we can have a really insightful conversation.
Well, to kick things off, it may be great to hear a little bit about your background, how you got started in finance, where you grew up, how you got involved with the startup community as well. If you can just walk us through that, that'd be really helpful.
Yeah. So I grew up in the GTA pretty much my entire life or most of the part of my life that I can remember. I mean, we moved around a bit when I was really young, but I pretty much grew up in the GTA. In terms of deciding to go into accounting, it was a pretty easy decision for me. I always felt comfortable with numbers more so than anything else. And early on, I realized that a finance leader has such an impact on an organization. Like they are involved in everything. And so it's not just the numbers. They are very much involved in the strategy of the business, in the direction of the business. Obviously, that happens later on in your career. That's not something you do right out of university. So I knew I wanted to be involved in helping a business grow and helping with the strategy. And I knew that I was really comfortable with numbers. So that's ultimately what made me go down that path. And two, I think there was going like in university, especially at the program that I was at, there was a lot of encouragement or placing kind of high value on the CPA designation. And so that also too motivated me to pursue the designation and then pursue a career in finance.
Yeah, that makes sense. And where did you go to school?
I went to Schulich at York.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned you were good at numbers. It sounds like you had interest in this space for quite some time and the strategy side of it obviously sounds really interesting and impactful. Curious to hear, like, at which point in time, you know, as you grow up, as you go through high school, university, you realize this is the exact kind of thing you want to, you know, spend your time on and you want to double down on it and you want to go actually work for a company here and build your career in the space.
I think it took a lot of time to figure that out. I don't think I really figured it out earlier on. I think I knew I liked the numbers. I knew accounting because I wanted to be involved, you know, help an organization grow. And then I also too, my uncle, who I'm quite close with, he has his own business and he always emphasized the importance of understanding the financial statements. And honestly, how that was kind of a big learning curve for him because that's not what his experience was throughout university and whatnot. And so he really appreciated that value. And so he always kind of instilled that thought process in me. And then even when I graduated university, and even when I got my designation, I followed a very traditional path where I went to work at the Big Four to get your, you know, till you get your designation. And even at that point in time, I actually didn't know what I wanted to do post audit. I knew audit wasn't necessarily for me because I felt like it lacked a lot of creativity. And I knew I didn't feel like my work was it didn't feel like the work was impactful because it was, you do this the same thing every year, you get the audit, there's like a stamp that everything is good, and then you do it again. And so it just felt very repetitive. It didn't feel, obviously audits are super important, but it didn't, I didn't feel as fulfilled as a result. And so actually when I left EY, I kind of fell into the Scotiabank role. Basically, the person who hired me at EY left and then kind of poached me realistically. And I didn't actually give that much thought to it. I just was like, this fell into my lap. Seems like an exciting opportunity. Let me try it out. And then I felt at Scotia a very similar feeling that I felt at EY. And I just didn't feel like I was seeing the results of my efforts. I wasn't seeing the direct outcome of the things that I was doing. And so I wasn't feeling motivated or excited. And so in order to kind of figure out what the future looked like for me or what I wanted to do as a finance professional, I actually started reaching out to the community on LinkedIn and just saying like, hey, just want to chat about what you do. Why do you like it? And as I was doing this sort of outreach, I got connected with a couple of people in the startup space. And so when I started speaking to these individuals, they were telling me about the variety that they had in their role and also being able to see the impact of the things that they have implemented or changed and feeling fulfilled as a result of that. And so it was at that point I knew that I wanted to get in the startup space because I really like change. I like wearing many different hats. I like a fast-paced environment. And so ultimately, when I did that kind of research or that outreach, I realized that that was a path for me. And so then around that time, there was a role posted at Cotton and I applied and thankfully got the job.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great story. Engaging the community. Also really, I think, underrated very often to actually just reach out to people on LinkedIn and get started that way. For everybody else who's listening, Eleni started off her career in EY. She moved over to Scotiabank after that and then effectively started on the stint of joining startups, very high growth startups, actually, Cotton and LumiQ and a bunch of other ones. And maybe just curious to hear from you, what was that experience like going from a big company, a more traditional, potentially finance role towards joining a startup where you have to wear a ton of hats and do a lot of different things at the same time?
Yeah, I think there was a big learning curve because I was previously exposed to a lot of structure and following the process that was taught to me. You don't often really go outside of that process. I mean, if you can, you will, if it's more efficient, but often it's kind of, you learn something, you learn a process and then it's rinse and repeat. Whereas going into a more startup space, there is no process. And a lot of times people are coming to you as the expert on this matter. And so it's definitely very different because you have to be very resourceful. And oftentimes, like candidly, I got asked questions that I had no idea the answer to. I was like, what? I guess I should know this. I'll go figure it out. Yeah. And so it's really being comfortable with the idea that you actually don't know anything, but you have confidence in yourself to go figure it out. And that I think is actually the most rewarding and fun part. Like you are forced to learn and do things very quickly on your own. Cause I thankfully have had two amazing mentors and bosses when I exited, but sometimes too, they're like, okay, I'm really busy. Here's this problem. Go fix it. We'll talk when I get a chance type of thing. Cause again, often these teams are spread really thinly and everyone's kind of running around. And so it really taught me to flex that muscle of being resourceful and going out and looking at other resources to find a solution. And a lot of people don't think finance is creative or accounting is creative. But I think being in a startup space, you get to be creative. Like you get to be creative with the models you build or the processes you roll out or the solutions you come up with. And so that I find to be really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll put you on the spot here. Can you share maybe an example where you were basically just told, go figure this out from your career and like where you went like, okay, I have no idea how to do this, but you know, step by step, I'm going to work my way towards an answer here.
I mean, I feel like there's so many examples. I mean, as simple as, you know, early on in my career, it's like, well, we're going to open up a US entity. What do we need to do to get that done? How do I open a bank account in the US? What am I doing there? So just going out and figuring out what that process looks like, or, oh, we need a line of credit. Okay, well, what do I do? Do I just walk into TD Bank and I ask for a line of credit? Like, what does that process look like? what does the bank need? Learning how to then communicate to the bank your story appropriately so that way they can fully understand, you know, what it is that you guys are doing, what the growth looks like, what the risks truly are. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that I feel like every day is like, go figure this out.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I'll switch gears a little bit. So you're now leading a team at LumiQ and you guys are growing very rapidly, building a really exciting business. Maybe just kind of curious to hear from your end. You've been there for a few years. How's the finance team at LumiQ grown and, you know, change over time as you've been there, as you've sort of led that function in the business?
Yeah, I think with any growing company, needs can change really quickly. And oftentimes it's kind of hard to project what the team's going to look like in, you know, 6 months, a year to come. And so I find that right now it's kind of like, I guess I wish we were a little bit more, it's me really, and I'm a little bit more proactive. And so I think what I'm learning and how things are changing is that we need to get ahead of what the team's going to look like and what those needs are so we can hire earlier. And then that way it doesn't feel like, you know, people are at their max. And so we can still be efficient. And so I think what's changing with the team is, you know, we were really, really scrappy when we first joined, but because of this rapid growth, we need to sophisticate. Mm. But in order to sophisticate, that means we need more people because there's only so much two or three people can do. And so right now I'm just looking at where are the gaps in our current team and how quickly can we fill that? Mm. And so I think, yeah, it's just moving towards more sophistication, more building out refined processes, and then having a team to support that change and to support that direction. But I do wish that I was a little bit more proactive with it. I wasn't really thinking of, okay, what does the finance team look like in a year from now? It was more so day to day. And so what I'm really trying to do is think, okay, what are we going to need in 6 months? We're going to need to implement an ERP. Well, then we're going to probably need another person on our team. When do we need to hire that person? So it's really just about sophisticating it and getting away from that scrappy team to being someone that's more, I guess, just able to support the growth of the business.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's a pretty natural, I think, evolution as the business grows. One, the metaphor that my co-founder actually uses quite a bit is, you know, if you're going to climb a mountain, make sure you don't like pack a small knapsack, make sure you have all the stuff you actually need. And yeah. A lot of that planning probably happens in advance and making sure you have all the resources you need to actually hit your big, ambitious goals as a company.
Yeah. And I think too, what I've also learned from this process is be an advocate for your team. Like I think, especially as someone who just kind of stepped into a director role, I almost felt timid to say, hey, I need to go up to leadership and be like, hey, I need another team member or I need more things to put in my backpack. I think it's really important when you're a leader, you need to advocate for your team and you need to explain why it is you need this extra person or the software or whatever this thing or whatever you need to add into the backpack. You need to be able to advocate for it and don't be like scared to do it. Just make sure you have the facts to support it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when you think about, you know, building a high growth company, a high growth team in Canada, what have you found works well for you in terms of finding the best talent? Because I imagine that's also something that you want to have on your team to make sure you can achieve all these ambitious goals. Where do you go? What kind of like, you know, tactics you use? What are the things that you're willing to share with others in terms of how to find this great talent in Canada?
I think it can definitely be really tough, especially when you get a large volume of applications. It's really hard to sift through and figure out, hey, who is this person? Especially because I'm finding too, a lot of the times the resumes are almost the same. I mean, it's sure slightly different company, slightly different role, but they all kind of look the same. So it's like, how do you figure out, you know, which from this pile is that person that's going to fit the team perfectly? And for me to help kind of sift through this is I will prioritize anyone who messages me on LinkedIn or finds my email. And it's not just a blanket, hey, I applied to this role, like would be really interested. I love it when I see people take some time to write out something thoughtful and to express why they think really briefly, like I don't need an essay or anything like that, but I just want to know that they took the time to thoughtfully think about applying to this role. And with that thoughtfulness, I know that they've given consideration that, okay, I actually want to apply to this job. Like this job excites me. It's not just like another job I'm applying to. And so I will always prioritize those people. I will send it to our HR team and be like, hey, these like four people messaged me, really thoughtful messages. I'd love to get them on a call. The other thing I do like to do is reach out to my network, especially if I'm having a hard time filling a role, to say, hey, do you know anyone that's looking that you've worked with before and that you can vouch and say, oh, this person is actually really, really great at their job. And so that's another thing that I do. But I mean, it's quite difficult. I do really emphasize that, you know, when someone's going out of their way to reach out to you, I do think that that person has the right, like, hunger. Mm. And so that is kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, for new finance leaders, emerging finance leaders who are thinking about joining startups, who are thinking to making the same hop that you've done from more traditional businesses towards a fast growth startup environment, like, what advice would you give to them? Like, what are the things you've learned that in retrospect you maybe would have done differently that you would want others to hear as well?
I think the first thing that I would encourage anyone that's listening and considering making that jump is really assessing, is it right for them? So I don't regret it at all. I absolutely love it. But what I've seen either from people that I've worked with or have spoken to other people that have made the jump and that maybe aren't as happy, is that they really don't enjoy how quickly things change, and that they feel like they miss routine. Mm. And so I think the first thing is just really making sure that this type of structure and this type of environment suits your needs, because otherwise you'll be really unhappy and very, very stressed. I think for those who know for sure that this is something that they want to get into, I think it's really, really important to network and kind of reach out to, again, your community and get an understanding of, you know, what skills you really think are important to have when trying to get into a startup space. And from my experience and what I wish I knew earlier is really building out your Excel skills and modeling capabilities. Because oftentimes when you're joining a smaller company, you don't have the resources to implement some sophisticated tool to really clean up the data, to help spit out the answer that you're looking for. You really need to be able to manipulate large data sets and feel really comfortable with it and be efficient at it. Mm. And so I wish earlier on in my career, I took as many Excel modeling courses because even now I still feel like I want to take more courses to continue to flex that muscle, to build up that muscle, because I think that's one of the most important things, because you will not be able to just bring in some fancy tool, not until later on at least.
Yeah, that makes sense. And where do you usually go to find either inspiration or like to learn new tools and new, new skills in this area yourself?
LumiQ. I often turn to our app first. That is the first place I'll go to see if there is something that I can listen to cover that concept. And there actually is a bunch of modeling. There's two modeling paths, and there even is like a podcast on just best practices in Excel. And those are the first places that I will turn to. And then from there, if I feel like I need something additional, I'll look online. I'll even look on YouTube, to be honest, and watch if there's like a specific, you know, function I want to learn or a specific thing I want to build. I will turn to YouTube. And then I will also turn to my mentors who are really, really strong in Excel. And I'll even hop on a call and be like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. How would you approach this?
That's awesome. I love your answer. That wasn't planned at all, by the way. That was a great answer. And maybe just to, you know, wrap up this theme of startups, you mentioned it's hard. There's a lot of skills you need to learn. Things change really fast. It is genuinely a difficult experience. But what is the one thing maybe you can think of that you just love doing that gets you really excited? What's the most fun part of your job, being the startup, leading a finance team? What gets you excited the most personally?
I love seeing the fruits of my labor. So being able to implement a new process or build out a new model and then seeing it work and then getting feedback from people saying like, wow, this is so much better than what it was before. And even just feeling it within our team, like, oh, it took us forever to reconcile this thing. We built out this cool model, or we implemented some sort of automation, and now we just click refresh.
Yeah.
And being able to have that comparison to like, this is where we started, and in a short time, this is where we are, is so rewarding and just really fun. And that's the creative side of it. Being able to problem solve and then get to the end goal and seeing that change is very rewarding.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great answer. Problem solving, being creative in the process, resonates a ton. Something I hear all the time from people who are looking to join a startup and in every function. That doesn't have to be finance, literally across the board.
Agreed.
Maybe another thing I was going to pick your brain on, you know, this might be considered a hot topic for a few people, but how do you think about planning and operations from finance point of view? What do you guys do at LumiQ to actually do planning as a company? And how do you contribute to that yourself?
I think we're still kind of refining that process. And it's something new that I'm stepping into, because before, the person that was there before me, the CFO, really owned that process. And so this will be my first year that I'll actually be more involved. Historically, I was more of a support. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping this year I can take more of a lead role. And so to be completely honest, I don't know exactly what the answer is or what that's going to look like. I think what I've heard, at least within the industry, is there's a lot of moving pieces. You need to work with, in order to do proper planning and strategy, you need to work with a lot of different stakeholders who don't actually understand the accounting side of thing or even understand what the forecasting process looks like. So making sure you're educating the people that you're working with so that way they understand. I find that when you understand the purpose, it helps people connect the dots. Mm. So taking that time to really make sure the objective is outlined. And then I think it's going back to building out a really sophisticated, clean financial model that's easy to update when you gather that information and being able to iterate on different versions. Because I find too that one of the pain points that I've heard from my peers is that they have like 7 different versions and they no longer remember which one is which. And it's not communicated to everyone, the changes. So I think if you can really build out something that's quite sophisticated, but also very easy to use, and you stay really organized, I'm hoping that it will get ahead of those pain points. But again, candidly, I haven't actually led any of that before. This will probably be my first year. So maybe we can connect a year from now and I can let you know.
Yeah, we'll do before and after take. But I think what I'm hearing from you, which resonates a ton because we work with our finance team very closely at Float, is you want to lead with context, right? Like you want to educate people about the process and why it's important, because very often finance can probably be seen as, you know, just additional bureaucracy in a company, but it's really not. And it's very, very important, the work that actually happens behind the scenes. And then the second piece I heard from you was, you know, being agile and being able to update while maintaining that single source of truth, so that if your business moves fast, you're able to adjust on the fly and not cause a ton of confusion for everybody else who's involved in the process, who's relying on you to actually give them the numbers or targets and something to work backwards from, right, for each individual team.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think to add to that, and this is something I actually learned, again, I'm not just like shamelessly trying to promote LumiQ, but this is one of my favorite podcasts. It's about like 10 pitfalls of building a financial model. And one of them was saying that over complex models can actually make things a lot worse. Like you're trying to get so accurate. But the model is so complex that when you're trying to be agile and trying to make that adjustment, you no longer can, and the thing falls apart and you can't maintain it. And so I think that is also super important. Like there's obviously a middle, don't oversimplify, but don't overcomplicate. You have to find that midpoint. And again, I don't know exactly what that looks like because it's going to be different for every company, but I think that's something that needs to be kept in mind, because if you can't maintain it, or if it takes you an hour to update it every single time, then it's no longer working for you.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense. I think you've actually started touching on this a little bit, but my next question was, you know, there's a perception sometimes that might exist in finance, especially for somebody looking at finance as a function from outside in, thinking about it in a very traditional lens. But there's a phrase that I hear more often now, and I think we just need to, you know, say out loud as an industry more often too, is just finance is a partner of the business. So I'm curious to hear, like, what does that mean to you? How do you try to embody that every day for your company, for your team, for LumiQ? And like, what are the tactics you found that like you find help the team the most for you to show up as a partner for them and not somebody who like constrains them in any way, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think what's really, really important is making sure you have those personal connections with the different departments and trying to meet with them as regularly as possible. And not just so that you're gaining the benefit, but also so that they're gaining the benefit and they see the value that you bring to the team. And so one of the things that we do is, you know, on a monthly basis, we'll meet with the heads of the department individually, because it's team specific, and just say, hey, this is, you know, where we're trending. This is what we budgeted. These are some of the variances. First of all, let's like talk through that. and understand what happened. Two, do we need to reforecast? And I find that that exercise, not only does it help me so I understand what's going on, but it also helps them adjust their strategy for the next month and where they can spend versus where they cannot spend. And so I find that when we were doing that exercise, it helped me also know what's going on in the business, what new thing is happening, what system are we implementing. And then two, I found that the leaders also got quite excited to have those conversations because it gave them clarity on, okay, this is where we're at. And this is now an opportunity for us to, oh, I thought we had overspent, but we didn't. Mm. And now maybe we can go to this conference. That's going to be amazing for us. And so I do find that as long as you can give back, then there is this mutual give and take between the different departments, and they're going to want to have finance in the room versus having them not be in the room. Because like you said, they kind of think people view finance as like the police or an afterthought. You want to be like right at the forefront.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like how you said it. People want to have the finance in the room. That sounds like a very healthy frame, because just the wealth of knowledge and insights and sort of forecasting that can be done in other functions across the business, if you actually have the finance team sitting in the room, is really, really powerful. It's almost like a different business, the way it operates behind the scenes. Maybe to sort of talk a bit more about like what's ahead for you guys is, what are some of the priorities that you have personally yourself in the coming year, call it, that you're most excited about to work on next?
I think it's kind of going back to what I mentioned earlier when I was talking about growing the team. It's just really making us a little bit more sophisticated and looking to find solutions to make us way more agile. Like, we're still very much scrappy. We're still doing a lot of things in Excel. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. But I want to look to see if there are opportunities for us to be more efficient, also cost effectively too, because we obviously have to keep the budget in mind. But really working towards being that agile team and being able to have live data and, like, you know, closing as simple as closing the month end process. If it takes you a month to close month end, you're delivering that data too late. It's stale data. At this point, you need to deliver it earlier so we can act on it and shift or react accordingly. And so really being able to be more, again, like, provide live data, and so we can make those strategic decisions in a timely manner.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, a very common answer in this case is like, invest in tech, sort of level up your reporting, and so on and so on. With all the things that are happening right now in, you know, the world of automation and things like that, what are the technologies you're most excited about? What are the problems you still find are not solved, and where you think there's opportunity for a technology solution or something similar to come in and actually help make your life easier in your shoes?
I think something that I struggle with is I get excited about any like new tech solution. I get really, really fired up.
Same here. Yeah.
I'm hoping that it's going to solve all my problems. And that's obviously not the truth. I think it's hard to say specifically what it is I'm excited about, because there's a lot of different software solutions or tech products out there that can support in different pillars of finance. I think right now, again, because we were talking about strategy and budgeting, I'm curious about the FP&A tools that are out there. Now, the thing that I noticed is a bit of a problem is taking the time to learn how to use these new softwares. And so I find that with a lot of different tools, it's actually very hard to adopt them. And as, again, startups are really, really lean and you don't really have a lot of time. And if it's going to take me hours to figure something out, sometimes I'll just be like, well, then I'll just do it in Excel because I'm way more comfortable. And I'm not necessarily saying that's the right thing to do, but making sure that there are some resources to help kind of handhold the people who are implementing the software. So like the one thing I love about Float is that I find it actually very intuitive and very easy for us to figure things out. And then I do know too, when we do run into issues, like, your team is very responsive. The worst thing, and I've had this happen before, is implementing a new software, you're having issues, you're reaching out to customer success or customer support, and it's radio silence. And you're having now to chase them. Why am I chasing you for the software that I'm paying for that you promised to do X, Y, Z, and everything's falling apart? That is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
At that point, I will just pull away from it and say, this isn't working. So not only is it important to have an amazing like software solution, but you need a good team to be able to help people implement the new software, get used to it and feel really good about it. And then after that, it's pretty much easy.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, we hear this a lot where nobody's in the business of selling features these days anymore. Like a single feature isn't actually going to solve the problem. You're selling solutions to customers, right? Like you have a problem, there's a solution that exists out there and you buy it, you pay for it, as you're mentioning. And if it doesn't actually solve your problem at the end of the day, then you might as well just reverse that transaction because why'd you just pay and spend a lot of money looking for something new? That makes enough sense. Curious maybe to hear, as we're sort of like wrapping up here, I have a bunch of rapid fire questions for you. These are supposed to be fun, so answer them in a way that come to mind as the first answer in your head. But first question for you is, what's the craziest thing you've seen somebody expense?
It's funny because I'm going to tell you a story about something I expensed. I really hope no one at EY listens to this, but I had to drive to a client site, and EY often will give you, if you don't have a car, they'll let you rent a car. This client site had no, like they did have parking for their employees, but no additional parking. So I had to park on the road. Now I didn't see that maybe I wasn't supposed to park there. And then I ended up getting a parking ticket that was $160.
Wow.
And I expensed it back to the company. I did write a whole write-up as to why I thought it was justified that they reimbursed me for this cost. And I actually got the money back. So I don't know if they read the paragraph that I wrote or if someone just blindly approved it. But yeah, that one was me.
Yeah, those rubber stamp approvals. What's a podcast, conference, or another resource you would recommend to our audience that's listening to this podcast or to other young and emerging finance leaders that you follow or, go to and things like that?
I sound like a broken record here, but LumiQ. I think we have so many different topics on our platform, from more soft skills to technical accounting. And then also there's videos that you can do, like the Excel videos. There's a Tableau path. That is pretty much my first stop. And that's actually, ultimately, I was using LumiQ before I joined, because when I needed help with something, I would just turn to the app. We were using it at Cotton. And so I just fell in love with the how much resources I have and how great the platform was. And that's also ultimately why I applied to work there.
That makes sense. What's a finance leader that you admire and you follow yourself?
I'm very, very fortunate. I have two amazing mentors that were both my bosses at some point. And that's my first boss at Cotton. When I interviewed at Cotton, I remember exiting. I don't think I've told her this, but I remember exiting that interview. It was during COVID. I was at home. I was actually taking the interview on the bathroom floor in my studio because me and my partner were living together and I didn't want anyone to hear because he was working. So I was sitting in the bathroom floor taking this interview. And I remember running out of the bathroom and telling my partner, I need to work for her. I really clicked with her. I thought she was really, really bright and intelligent. And I thought she'd be a great mentor and leader. And I was right. And she has been, even while she was at Cotton and even after she's exited Cotton. And then Craig, who was the CFO here, funny enough, when I was reaching out to my network, like when I was at Scotia before getting into the startup space, I actually reached out to Craig amongst many people. So I sent so many messages. A lot of them were never responded to, but Craig actually did. And so we hopped on a call and he gave me amazing advice. And I felt that he was just very willing to help. And so while I was at Cotton, anytime I ran into an issue and I, didn't want to bug my boss, I'd actually message him and we'd get on a call. And then he moved here. And basically, as soon as he kind of came to LumiQ, I messaged him and basically said, can you hire me? But thankfully, I have those two who have been amazing mentors. And since the finance community is pretty small, they actually know each other. I have a WhatsApp group. I threw them in a WhatsApp group and I titled it Help. And it's just where I put my questions in and I let them kind of guide me. So I feel very grateful to have both of them.
That's awesome. Having mentors like that is always great. For people who are like looking for a mentor or, a community to join, do you have any recommendations or advice of where they can go to sort of get started? Like, where do all the finance people hang out?
Yeah, I don't really know where all the finance people hang out, but I do think I would recommend what I did. And that's like reaching out to people on LinkedIn and building those connections. I mean, that's ultimately how I met Craig. And then I ended up he ended up hiring me. And then even though he's no longer at LumiQ, we still have a relationship. Another thing that I recommend doing too is if you do that like cold outreach and you do have a successful connection, I think at the end of every meeting that you have, ask them to introduce you to someone else. And that way that introduction's a warm introduction and you're more likely to get a response. And hopefully as you, you know, build out your network and you communicate with these people, you also find who you click with naturally. And so when you have that like immediate click, I definitely encourage you to just keep following up, you know, grab coffees, grab lunches, just stay on top so you can maintain that relationship.
Yeah, that makes all sense. Super helpful. I thought for a second you're going to say there's some bar on Yonge Street where all the accountants hang out on Friday nights. But
not that I know of. I'm not getting the invite.
Yeah, that makes sense. Awesome. I mean, this was awesome. This was really great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. It was a lot of fun. You shared a lot of, I think, great advice and wisdom that a lot of people who are listening to this will really enjoy hearing as well. And yeah, it's awesome to have you part of the community. If there's a way people can connect with you, what's the best way to do that? Is it follow you on LinkedIn or something similar?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be the best way to reach out. I'm often on there. And so, yeah, I think that would be probably the best approach.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Retained Learnings. We want to reach as many Canadian finance professionals as possible. So if you have 2 minutes to spare, we'd love for you to rate and review the new show. Sharing on social media helps too, and you can tag @Flowcard. I'm Rob Kazam, and until next time, take care.